Hello, everyone. Today, I will present to you the differential and private genome data dissemination through top-down specialization. This is an application to the 2014 IDASH Healthcare Privacy Protection Challenge. I'm Sean Wang, a postdoc researcher from Division of Biomedical Informatics at the University of California, San Diego. And this is a joint work with the following people. Here is the outline of today's presentation. We will start from a brief introduction about the human genome privacy. Human genomes are important to the genomic research and the biomedical research, and they are becoming part of the electronic health record. Genome-wide association study is a good example of using human genome data in biomedical research, and GWAS mainly focus on the association between SNPs and traits like major diseases. And the SNP means single nucleotide polymorphism. However, the genomic data are also highly sensitive. Some potential privacy risks include but not limited to the follows. For example, like the disease association risk, like the predisposition to a diabetes or cancer of an individual, the re-identification risk where the released genomic data can be used to re-identify a person, and the information disclosure risk of the blood relatives, as the blood relatives usually share very similar genetic features, therefore the disclosure of a single family members' genomic data may put the privacy of the whole family at risk. Finally, there's still a great fear of unknown. Every day, we can learn something new about our genomes. Therefore, the currently released non-sensitive genomic segment may become very sensitive information in the future due to the new knowledge. Here, we review some existing genome privacy research. Insofar that as few as 75 statistically independent SNPs will be sufficient to identify a person. And moreover, Jim Reich found that the surname can be recovered from personal genomes by profiling salt tender repeat on the Y chromosomes and querying recreational genetic genealogy databases. Besides, Homer study indicate that even statistics in genomic studies may be unsafe. Here we assume we can collect two GWAS samples from public repository and clinical trial respectively. We are interested in if a person was in a clinical trial. Just based on the minor allele frequency of the SNPs, we can measure the similarity between the samples to tell if Y is likely to be in a mixture or in a reference population or equally likely to be in both. Based on the ID assumption of those SNPs readings, tests can be construct to evaluate whether a person of the interest was in a clinical trial. Due to those potential privacy risks, NIH has removed the most aggregated research results from the public domain to protect genome privacy. And it's becoming more and more important to study genome privacy protection method to mitigate those privacy risks. To answer this call, IDASH has hosted the Healthcare Privacy Protection Challenge in this year. IDASH stands for Integrating Data for Analysis, Anonymization, and Sharing, which is one of the national centers for biomedical computing founded by NIH in 2010 with a focus on data privacy. The workshop is co-organized by the Indiana University and the Vanderbilt University, which include two tasks, and we have six teams participating in this challenge. And the goal of the first task is to understand the utility balance in the public released SNP data after applying a proper anonymization method in GWAS. The utility is measured by the number of significant SNPs identified by the K-square association test over 200 case population from the personal genome project and another 200 control population from the HapMap project. And the privacy protection is quantified by the anonymized data's resistance to the likelihood ratio test. The goal of the second task is to evaluate how much utility can be preserved in an anonymized result of GWAS. The utility is how likely the top K most significant SNPs can be preserved after applying the anonymization algorithm. And the protection method used in this task is differential privacy with privacy budget equal to 1. I will provide more details about differential privacy in the next few slides. And in this presentation, I will focus on the task 1 by introducing the differential and private genome data dissemination through top-down specialization. At the end of this presentation, I will briefly introduce the result of task 2 we found in this challenge and give a comparison between both tasks. And here's the privacy model used in our framework. Here's the overview of the data collection and the data population workflow. Each individual contributes his or her data to a data publisher and a certain informed consent agreement. Then the data publisher can apply an anonymization algorithm on the raw data so that they can release the data without disclosure or any privacy information of the contributor. And finally, the data user can get those anonymized data and conduct some research. And those data user are very interested in the data utility. And here is the differential privacy framework, which is proposed by Cynthia DeVoe in 2006. And we give an illustrative example of differential privacy framework in this slide. Suppose there are two data sets, D and D prime, which difference only by one record. By using differential private anonymization algorithm over both data sets, the adversary is hard to tell from which data set the anonymized data set D star was generated. And here is a more formal definition of differential privacy. Suppose D and D prime are neighboring data set. If they differ at most one record, and non-interactive privacy mechanism A gives epsilon differential privacy if the probability ratio of applying the same mechanism over two neighboring data sets to generate the same output D star is bounded by the e to the epsilon as shown in this equation. And here we will introduce a Laplacian mechanism to achieve differential privacy. For accounting query F over a data set D, the differentially private result can be obtained by adding a Laplacian noise with standard deviation delta F over epsilon. Here the epsilon is privacy budget, delta F is the sensitivity of the function, is defined as the which measure the maximum difference by applying the function to all possible neighboring data sets, D and D prime. And suppose we have a bunch of, here we will introduce the composition rule in differential privacy. Suppose we have a bunch of sequential queries to the same data set, where each query consumes a certain privacy budget. Then the total budget of this those queries will be the aggregation over each individual queries. And in contrast, if we apply multiple queries over disjoint data sets in parallel, then the total budget will be the maximum privacy budget used in each query. Okay. And now I will present the proposed privacy preserving genomic data dissemination model. Here's a data set format used in this study. We have 200 individuals in a case group, which correspond to each row, and multiple genotypes for each individual as shown in each columns with those two genotypes here. And then we partition genotypes into blocks In this example, we group the first two genotypes into one box for five individuals. Then we can derive four unique combinations from the data set. The first two individuals contribute to the first unique combination, and the remaining three corresponding to the remaining three unique combination. And finally, we can generate a two-level taxonomy tree with root as any and leaves as each unique combination. Here we suppose the taxonomy tree is public information and have no privacy risk. Now we generalize each block at the top level of the taxonomy tree as any for all blocks. Suppose we have three blocks in the data set, and the total count of the data set is 200. Then we randomly select a block for specialization based on the below taxonomy tree as shown below. For example, we try to specialize the first block here. Then we look the tree here. We can see we can split the RNA into two parts, and where the first part refers to the record with genotypes AGCC, and the second part refers to the genotypes combination AACG, and the count of the query also split according to the combination here. We have 70 here and 130 here for total 200. And following the same procedure, for example, in the last iteration, we choose the block three here, and we split the RNA into the leaves node according to this tree here. And also we split the count. We can see the total count is still equal to the 200. And finally, to achieve differential privacy, we add Laplacian noisy on those count and release those noisy adding counts to preserve the privacy. Here's an example of the released table, and we have multiple records. Some record was replaced by any, which means can be any combination from the unique combination. And here's a summary of the algorithm. I won't go into details. And here we will present the result of our framework. The data set, we are using two different data sets. The control and the case data set contains 200 participants with 311 SNPs in the first data set and 16 SNPs in the second data set. And the case data set are from the Personal Genome Project and the control data set from the HapMap project. And both the control the case data set has high re-identification risk before applying privacy preserving techniques. And the number of specialization used in our simulation is 5. Means we split 5 times of the generalized data, and the length of each block is 6 genotypes. And here is how we evaluate the privacy risk. We are using the likelihood ratio test to evaluate the privacy risk. The likelihood ratio test provides the upper bound on the power of any method for detection of individual in a pool, as shown in this equation, where the xj is the allele types, where zero for major allele and one for the minor allele, and the j is the j SNP site, and m is total number of SNPs in the case of control groups, and the pj is the number of alleles, minor alleles. Pj is the minor allele frequency. Sorry. It's a minor allele frequency of the J SNPs in the case group, and the P J hat is the corresponding number for the reference groups. And here we show the scatter plot of the likelihood ratio test statistics of 200 individuals in our case group, and they assign a threshold at 0.0 significant level. Then we can see there are 5 people can be
identified with a high probability. And here's the utility measurement used in our study. We use a case control association test. Suppose we have a genotype contingency table as shown here, and then we can derive the observed allele frequency contingency table, 2x2 table here, and also we can calculate the expected allele frequency count here. And then we can use chi-square test for independence to test the independence of the row and the columns as the null hypothesis with chi-square test of one degree of freedom. And here's the experimental result where we compare the proposed method with the other two teams from Indiana University and the University of Oklahoma. The privacy risk in the perturbed data was measured using the power of likelihood ratio test. This is the fraction of case and the individual who can be re-identified with confidence higher than a threshold. From the result, we can see that the privacy risk was significantly mitigated by the proposed method on both data sides. Here, we achieve a power of 0.1 and a zero power of 0.09 here. And then we then measure the utility of the perturbed data based on the significance SNPs detected by using chi-square test and the different p-value cutoffs. The cutoff we are using here is 0.05, 0.01, and 1 to the 10 minus 5. And the true SNPs, true significant SNPs is provided in the last column in this table as reference. We can see almost all the true significant SNPs were detected in both this side by all methods. All the methods achieve very high true positive rate. But it's worth mentioning that there are still a large number of false positive here, which means they provide too much false positive significant SNPs, and among which we can see the proposed method shows a bit lower a false positive rate. And we draw some conclusion of the task one. It seems it's a challenge to privacy preserve sharing of SNP data while maintaining their utility in GWAS using differential privacy. Even for a single genomic loci involving a few hundreds of SNPs, the utility of data was much damaged after noisy adding to ensure the privacy protection. And it's unlikely that the current differential privacy technique will scale well for sharing whole genome sequencing data. And in our future work, we may test the different partitioning method for SNP block generation, and we can use some utility function for the specialization, and we can use more than two-level trees to specify, to represent the unique combinations. Here, I will briefly introduce the results from task two, privacy preserving release of top K most significant SNPs. The key idea, something missing. The key idea in the task two is that suppose we have 40 SNPs and we have the contingency table of each SNPs. Based on this contingency table, we can generate some the chi-square statistics. Then we add Laplacian noisy onto the chi-square statistics. Then we rank the SNPs based on those noisy adding chi-square statistics. And we try to make sure, we try to verify if the noisy, the rank based on the noisy version of the chi-square can still preserve the significance of the original data. And here's some result we got from the task two. And the probability that the top K most significant SNPs have been preserved in the released data over 1,000 trials is shown in this table. And we use two different data sets. One is a small data set with 5,000 SNPs, and the other is the large data set with 100K SNPs. And we can see if K is equal to 1, 3, or 5, we have a very high accuracy to preserve those top K SNPs. But when we increase K to a large number, then the performance goes bad. And here is some conclusion about the test two. Privacy preserving technique works surprisingly well on population outcome of GWAS-like analysis. And we would like to thank those grant support from the funding agency NIH. And here we can take questions. And we are also hosting the 2014 IDH Healthcare Privacy Protection Challenge. For more information, you can visit humangenomeprivacy.org for more information. Thank you.
All right. Let's thank the speaker. Now, we do have a microphone set up for questions. I do request that everyone go to the mic instead of shouting from the stands. I see Carl's getting up with a question. But we'd like to make this discussion-oriented. Everything here today is going to be preliminary research. This is not what we consider, you know, I don't think anyone here is at the stage of publishing the results in a full conference, but let's get the discussion going. Carl.
Suppose you present this to researchers who are, you know, existing now and do this kind of work, and how do you explain to them whether the epsilon equals 1 is good enough, and whether the error rates are good enough given the epsilon choice?
Oh, yeah, this is a very good question. Actually, this is a drawback of the differential privacy. Actually, there's no physical meaning of the differential budget. When the first time the differential privacy was proposed by DeVog. So normally, based on the existing research in the research committee in differential privacy, usually most people said the differential private budget equal to 1. So we cannot answer this question, like the physical meaning of the differential privacy budget.
So if researchers in the area said that your error rates were unacceptable, would you set the privacy budget to 2?
What do you mean the average rate?
In other words, would you raise the budget in order to get better accuracy?
Yes, we can raise the budget to get accuracy, but we compromise the privacy risk because in the research community, most researchers consider epsilon equal to 1 is a strong protection for the privacy risk. So we set the criteria like epsilon equal to 1, then we try to quantify the utility. Of course, if we increase the privacy budget, we can increase the utility.
Yeah, so I guess what stops you is the thing I'm asking. In other words, if you got poor accuracy and people demanded better accuracy, why not just keep raising the privacy budget until you get adequate accuracy? And who would stop you and tell you that that privacy budget is unacceptable since no one understands what it means?
Oh, yeah, there are similar questions. Actually, there's no physical meaning about this privacy budget. So it's hard to see there's a threshold that you can stop the privacy budget to gain the utility. So it's still open research questions.